is lower than it was in the previous week.
Weeknights at 6:30.
Right now, only 16% of the teacher population is Hispanic, Latino, African American.
Join us for community news and conversations right after All Things Considered.
And yes, I am a kind of a wacky professor.
The Local Edition, weeknights at 6:30.
On the next On Being, a candid conversation about hope with Wajahat Ali and Kate Bowler.
Now that we know, right? Like now that we know that life can come apart in an instant, then how do we live like this? And I mean like really live.
I'm Krista Tippett. Join us.
Support for Radio Catskill comes from Two Queens, offering coffee, tea, and bees. Located in Pete's Plaza, Narrowsburg, New York. TwoQueensCoffee.com. And from listeners like you.
My guest today on Catskill Character is a photographer, classical pianist and classical guitarist, a sculptor, a former dentist, a teacher, a trained hypnotist, a computer whiz, a writer. This is getting ridiculous, I know, but and he is about to become a certified emergency medical technician. I'm happy to welcome John Zimmerman to Catskill Character. Welcome, John. You're the perfect first guest to have on Catskill Character, How We Work. You've done so many different jobs, and you have such mad skills.
Mad skills? Mad. Maybe because I am mad.
You know, you'd have to be a little mad to be able to do all of that. You must get tired.
That's what keeps me going.
Yeah, I guess. Let's start at the beginning. Mm-hmm. You were born and raised in Lancaster County, Pennsylvania. You want to tell us about that?
Yeah, well, first you have to say Lancaster, not Lancaster.
Ooh, forgive me. Lancaster.
Lancaster, yes. My family came over to Lancaster County, the Zimmermans, in 1732.
Wow.
So they were kicked out of Switzerland because they were the wrong kind of Protestants. So they were a Mennonite and a Baptist. Came through Philadelphia and settled in Lancaster County. And the other side of my family, my mother's side, Summers, also been in Lancaster County about that long. So Summers and Zimmermans. Nobody's left. My great-grandfather had 15 children, and all of the kids are around there, most of them, and I'm one of the few in my family that have left that area.
Hmm. Wait a minute. You said that most of them are still...
Yeah, when I was growing up, because of my great-grandfather had 15 kids, we would have monthly get-togethers and just the women, the mothers and sisters, and would bring all their kids.
Oh, what did you tell me?
That's called a hen party.
A hen party, yeah.
So I knew all my second cousins and everything always growing up, and the joke was in school that we were related to half the school, either through marriage or directly, because everybody was from there. We get together in the summertime, we'd have family reunion outside. But at Thanksgiving, we'd all get together for Thanksgiving in a church hall, and that was over 100 people for Thanksgiving dinner. So, yeah, they're all sort of in that area living together. A few have left now, but a lot of them still live there.
So I would imagine living out there, you have a lot of Amish influence.
Yeah, you don't realize it until you leave. It's actually part of your speech patterns, the words that you use in your whole life. Growing up, we had different terms for things. My mother used to always say, stop rutching around in your seat in church, which comes from a German word, from squirming around. And tut was a paper bag. And we'd also go to the refrigerator and say, the milk is all. And
the milk is all?
The milk is all, yeah. So everybody says, it's all what? And it said, well, it's all gone.
Oh.
Okay. And it comes from German, das ist alles. Yeah, so we have, you know, translations, real words, or just made-up words. It's from Pennsylvania Dutch. Yeah.
This is such the quintessential country upbringing. I really envy that.
It was great because when you were a kid, Lancaster County was much quieter than it is now. And we just hop on our bikes and go riding around, go visit our aunts or something on the farm, you know, go swim in the pond. And we used to pick crick tea, which was mint tea that grew by the streams, and bring that back home and make mint tea, cold mint tea out of that. And,
crick tea?
Crick tea. Well, crick or creek.
Oh,
we call them
cricks.
Yeah. We call them cricks.
Okay. Gotcha.
But people call them creeks. Yeah.
Yes.
That's another, I guess, Lancaster County thing. Yeah, it's called a creek. It's just a minty that grew wild. And we just had, you know, shoe fly pies and lots of other things that were.
What is shoe fly pie?
Shoe fly pie is a lot of sugar.
Okay.
So it's molasses and eggs. It's very gooey and sticky. Everybody has a different kind, whether it's wet bottom or dry bottom shoe fly pie. So you have all different kinds, depending
on
the family.
So it's like shoe fly.
Shoe fly.
Yeah, in other words,
yeah. But somehow it became the name of a pie. Yeah.
Didn't you learn to play the piano when you were quite young?
Yes. My grandmother bought my first piano and also paid for my piano lessons. I used to practice sometimes, you know, down at my grandmother's house, and she'd be in the kitchen doing something, and I hit a wrong note, and she goes, "No, that's a G." You know, I could never figure out how she knew all that. But she used to encourage me in music, and she'd take me to recitals, you know, different concerts and things, like at Longwood Gardens and into Philadelphia for organ recitals and piano recitals and things like that. So that's where I got the music side. That's from my Zimmerman grandmother, and she had a little band that she, you know, was the conductor or ran the kids band in Acklen, which was where they were from and where they lived, right over the border from Lancaster County. So she was very musical.
She's a band leader. That
yeah.
is so cool.
Band leader. And she also started the family business, which was Summers and Zims, which was started back then. And now my brothers actually run it. So
now,
it's still there.
Summers is the other side of the family.
Yeah. So my father actually took my mother's side of the family and merged it with with his side of the family. So
oh, that's nice.
Yeah. So now it was all together. Yeah.
So you're one of those lucky people that had two sets of grandmas.
Yes. Yeah, my other grandmother, my grandmother Summers, lived two doors down from us, and that's where my mother grew up along with her sister in that house, and my mother's sister lived next door to us. So we all had this, you know, we'd all run back and forth to each other's homes and things, and my grandmother Summers was sort of the opposite of my grandmother Zimmerman. My grandmother Summers was a real farm lady type, just very earthy.
Mother Earth.
Yeah, Mother Earth. Yeah. We'd do all the cooking, and every Sunday night we'd have dinner together at their place, and we'd sit in a porch and just watch the world go by and talk. And both my grandmothers were really a big influence on me. Yeah.
I picture her with an apron on and you're sitting on her lap.
Well, the big thing that some people up here know about is our donut day. So Fasnacht. So my grandmother Summers was the inspiration for making Fasnacht for Lent, which is a Dutch version of almost like a beignet. So it's a fried yeasted donut. So she used to always make them every winter, not necessarily for Fat Tuesday, but at that time of year. And then I started taking over that tradition of making Fasnacht after she passed away. So we still do it up here.
So I should have added that to your introduction, a Fasnacht maker.
Yeah, we just made 200 donuts a couple weeks ago.
Oh my goodness. And you didn't bring me one, John.
No.
What kind of a guest are you?
I only had like a dozen left.
Oh, okay. So all this sounds really great, but when you were 10, something changed in your life. You want to tell us what happened?
When I was 10?
Brothers?
Oh, yeah, those.
You see, you blank. You yeah. just blocked it out.
Yeah. Yeah, I was the only child for 10 years, and then my mother announced that I was going to have a sibling. So then I had the first brother, so that was Jerry. A few months after that, my mother said, "We're going to have another child."
Wow, they got busy.
Yeah. So my second brother was born 11 months after that. His name's Joe. And my mother always said, when she told me the second one was coming, I said, "Well, this could get monotonous."
Not for her. I guess you had to take care of them at some point, right?
Yeah, I was at that age then, you know, once they got past the little tiny baby stage of a year or two, well, then I was like 12 and 13 and 14 and built-in babysitter age because I couldn't drive or go anywhere. So I was always the built-in babysitter and take care of them.
And did she always say to you, "Would you take Jerry and Joe with you, please, when you would go out the house?"
Well, It's usually at the house. Yeah. Oh. I don't know if they came, because then it was, when I got older, I left school at high school at 17. So I'd just been driving a year at that point. And, so I really couldn't take the kids anywhere.
Right.
And then I was off to college. And so they grew up, turned into real people when I, when I was away to college. Yeah. So, I'd come home occasionally in the summertime, but, you know, and holidays and stuff. So, it was almost having two sets of family.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah.
You know, I'm listening to all this and I'm thinking, oh, you know, it all sounds so perfect. And you had this beautiful country upbringing and the grandmothers and the donuts. And, you know, it's all so good. But you did tell me that you were riddled with anxiety and you would become fearful of things.
Yeah, I was, I guess, a very anxious hyper child. I don't know. Maybe it comes with the territory. Later in my life, too, I realized that my mother was, too. So maybe I got it from my mother. Mm. But part of it, too, is I think, you know, if you're gay, you know you're different. And it may have been that also. Mm-hmm. And growing up in this, you know, great place, Lancaster County, I didn't know anybody was gay and didn't have any idea what that was, but I knew I was different. And that was always part of it. I'm also very much an introvert and like to be by myself and think a lot and play music and, you know, read and do stuff like that. But I realized that, you know, being an introvert and being by myself, that you're going to miss out a lot of life, right, with being with other people. And I was the only child for 10 years. So I started to do things, challenge myself to do things. And since I played the piano, I played the organ, the pipe organ in church, but that didn't get me, you know, interacting with any people. So I decided, well, you know, I'll start being in the band. So what instrument do you need? Well, you needed a trombone. So it's like, okay, I'll play the trombone. So I did things just to like try to get myself out and, you know, with more people and people in school. But then there were also physical challenges. So I decided I would learn how to ski, just to learn how to do that. I
always, were you afraid of heights or something?
No,
like
but
that?
I found out I really liked the speed.
Oh, okay.
So I did find out that part of that anxiety or always...
You could channel it.
Yeah, always like being on the edge of like falling downhill on skis, but keeping it in control. But then swimming was a challenge, you know, and if anybody's tried to swim distance, it can be a little, you know, challenging. And I decided, well, I'll be a lifeguard. You know, so I could challenge myself to just do something a little harder, a little more. And then that's when I decided that, you know, I try to do something every year as I was growing up that was different and that would challenge myself and sort of push, you know, where I was and just grow a little more and attack my fears head on.
This is Catskill Character, and I'm your host, Donna Fellenberg. We'll be right back with more from my guest, John Zimmerman, so stay tuned.
Support for WJFF Radio Catskill comes from the Calicoon Farmers Market, Calicoon Creek Park, serving local needs every Sunday and accepting pre-orders at calicoonfarmersmarket.org. From Forthright Cider, Youngsville, ciders and mead crafted with locally sourced ingredients, supporting community charities with a portion of sales through the Solidarity Cider Program. ForthrightCYDER.com. And from listeners like you who donate at WJFFradio.org. Thank you for all the ways you help WJFF Radio Catskill. Your support sustains the news, music, and local voices that make up WJFF. It's only possible because of your generosity. Help keep it going. Consider signing up to be a sound supporter to make sure Radio Catskill has your constant support. Go to WJFFradio.org. And thank you for supporting public radio in the Catskills and Northeast Pennsylvania.
Welcome back to Catskill Character. My guest today is John Zimmerman, who's been telling us about growing up in Lancaster County, Pennsylvania, how it, along with his large extended family, helped to shape him into a person who, instead of backing away from his fears, met them head on and decided at a very early age that every year he would challenge himself to do one thing that frightened him. In the second half of the show, we're going to learn how he developed his attitude toward work. which enabled him to do a wide variety of things, including dentistry, teaching, hypnotism. Well, I'll let him tell you. Here's more of my conversation with John Zimmerman. You were just a kid, and you were grappling with something, too, that you didn't quite understand. You knew you were different, but you couldn't put in, you had no vocabulary for it.
Yeah.
So unlike other people, you decide to challenge yourself. You decide that you're not going to just, like, crawl off into a corner somewhere with your fears and your anxieties. You're going to just get out there and do things. And I have to tell you, that's amazing. That's, like, total resilience.
It's also your family, you know.
Yeah.
It's my family really gave me, I always believe, the foundation to go out and try things. And if I failed, I knew I had the family back there.
It was okay.
Yeah, it was okay. Yeah. And that came from my grandparents, my father and mother. My father was very adventurous, I know. And so I think it's partly that, but he would, you know, I went to Europe twice before I got out of high school, and my parents had never been to Europe.
Hmm.
My parents sent me to Zermatt skiing for graduation, you know, and they'd never been there.
Wow.
So it was like, and they always knew, like, oh, he's gone, you know, where is he? He's in Europe. I don't know. It's just like, he just pops out and goes away.
And all this time, I remember you telling me you were taking a lot of photographs. You were really getting into photography. You love to photograph nature. And
yeah. When I was in high school, I started doing photography, and I worked for the yearbook and the newspaper, but I always did a lot of nature photography. So I go out hiking. I liked being out in the woods in nature. Ended up doing a lot of very close-up abstract kind of photography. And then when I actually went to Penn State the first year, I ended some of my photographs in a competition. A couple of them won some awards. So that was...
Of course, John.
But it was always a way to connect with nature. I always find things to get me out in nature.
Was it surprising to people because you were kind of artistic? You decided to go to pre-veterinary.
Yeah, yeah.
Course.
For science, yeah. Well, I was always a real science geek, I guess, particularly in the biological sciences. And I would tinker and, you know, with chemistry stuff. Music to me was always more personal. It was more of an outlet. You know, I'd sit and, which a lot of kids do, sit and listen to music, but I always listened to classical music when I was younger. I never really liked the Beatles or anything.
Oh my God.
So I had no Beatles albums, but I did have Carl Orff and Prokofiev and Shostakovich. So, and Charles Ives. I was always more into the more modern classical music, but I enjoyed playing Bach and that Mozart and that side of it, because I think that's very mathematical and science, though, too. So I do see them very related.
And yet, science. You went into science.
Yep, I went into science. I went to Penn State, wanted to go to a big school, get out of the country into a big school. Went to Penn State, started in pre-vet, and decided that probably that isn't what I wanted to do. I wasn't going to be mucking around the cow stables all the time to go to vet school. But I needed a profession. I guess that's part of growing up the way I did in Lancaster County. I needed a real job. So I always thought, okay, well, I really liked the pre-vet program. I stayed in pre-vet, but had to find something to do, as opposed to being a biologist or a naturalist. So I decided that I could put together my artistic side and my science and medical side and do dentistry, because I got to work with my hands. I always had like an itch in my hands. I had to build things and make things. So I thought that would be a good way to bring them all together, you know, do that and still give me time. As dentistry as a profession gives you time to do other things. It's not like you're on call all the time. When I was finishing dental school, I started working in the dental school. And
that was at Temple, right?
Yeah, Temple University, yeah. And then I got into doing some specialty work on handicap and disabled dentistry, and I really enjoyed that. Part of that was, you know, I had trouble, like, I have all these people, and it's hard to get, you have to have a lot of patience and a lot of time if you're spending with handicapped people. So how do you make money on that? And I really didn't want to go into a business, and that would tie me down into a private practice and sort of restrict me to what I could do. So I always stayed in universities because of the conflict of like trying to make money off of somebody who's in pain,
you know,
seemed difficult, but yeah, it has to be done and you have to pay for healthcare, but it just wasn't working for me. Mm-hmm. So I always stayed in a university.
So you developed this specialty of working with handicapped people, mentally handicapped, physically handicapped.
Yes, yeah.
What were some of the techniques that you used to help them?
Well, patience. And one of the things I learned from that is actually hypnosis. I'd started meditating when I was in college so I could try to keep myself a little calmer because I was a very hyper person. And then hypnosis seemed to build on that. And I actually learned and became certified in medical hypnosis. And I would use that on patients either directly or indirectly. You can actually use it indirectly, just in a quiet, calming voice to keep mm-hmm. people calm down, get them to relax more, particularly somebody who's anxious or somebody with a disability. So you don't have to use so much medication.
Did you ever get them so relaxed that you didn't have to use any medication?
Yeah, I had some people that would not take Novocaine at all. We'd just do the hypnosis. Yeah,
wow.
And they wouldn't flinch or anything because you can tell, right? if you're drilling somebody, it hurts.
Yeah, I think so.
Yeah, it's a little hard to hide it.
So from there, you went into computers. Now, how did that come about?
Yep. Well, the dental school was, this was in the early 80s, so computers were just starting. And they decided they were going to automate the dental school, all their billing and stuff. And they got a computer, but nobody knew how to work it. And it just sat there. And so I said, you know, well, I'd like to give it a try. You know, could I give it a try?
Another challenge.
Another challenge, yeah. And then it so happened that one of my patients ran the medical computer center for the hospital. And I was talking to her about it, and so she went to my dean and said, give me John for half the time. You can have him for half the time, and we'll get the computer system up and running, and he'll work for the dental school on computing. So I went back to school, took some courses in programming, and hung out with all the computer programmers, and I was wiring terminals and connecting computers, and we did billing to the state in Pennsylvania back in the mid-80s. Mm. They were like 9-inch floppy disks. And I think the whole computer had 250K of memory, 256K of memory. So, but it got the job done. Yeah. So that's how I got started in informatics. So biomedical informatics is really pulling together decision making and computers and information in medicine. And that really became my my academic profession after that.
And that took you to the University of Maryland, correct?
Yep. Yeah, University of Maryland. I was vice president for informatics at Maryland. So I was in charge of the what would be considered academic computing. It was the research and education side. And there I got more interested in education and how computers could help with teaching. We got some grants, you know, with the state on geriatrics and gerontology. And then I'd work at the VA. And I was still a dentist.
I was going to ask you that. Were you still working on people's teeth?
Yeah. So I still had an appointment in the dental school, and I worked in a nursing home or, you know, clinic attached to the nursing home. A lot of people in the dental school weren't really sure I was a dentist. Because I was really working in the computer center. But then I became able to blend, you know, medical and computing together and work on projects of clinical information systems or research or education using computers.
After the University of Maryland, where did you go from there?
Well, I met Ken Parks. He was doing a show in Baltimore, and being in Baltimore was never where I wanted to be. So I wanted to go back north, and Ken was living in New York as an actor. He says my ticket out of Baltimore was him. I got a job at Columbia University. So I was the first dental informatics person in the dental school at Columbia University. So I helped bring them on to the computer age at Columbia University. So that was 1992, yeah, because Ken and I met in 1990, yeah.
And you bought your house up here in 94, right?
Yeah. So when I moved to New York, Ken had a great apartment in Chelsea, but very small. And I said, well, you know, this is great, and it's great for work, but I can't just live in New York City because I have to get outside, right, and be outside in nature. So I said, we have to buy a house. Catskills was, back then, you know, it's really undeveloped, and the Delaware is pristine. 2 hours outside of New York, and you have the Delaware River with eagles, and you can kayak down it. It's
let's hope it stays that way.
Yeah. So, and it did have sort of you know, the country roots. It's more country than Lancaster County, more forested than Lancaster County, not as much farming. But it still had that kind of feel of authentic people.
Have you noticed any changes?
Well, there are more people. There's a lot of great restaurants now, which this is really good. There's a lot of, you know, really good artists. A lot of our friends do art. So we really try to buy like local, like our dishes and things like that. We try to buy local. I have chairs that were made by Pete Galbert when he was here. And we have a lot of art. Most of all of our artwork is from around here.
Oils so many and, incredible artists up here.
Yeah. And so I really like to be part of the, you know, community and support and, you know, give back that way too.
Yeah.
Keep our friends going. Yeah.
And you're also giving back by taking your medical training and applying it to becoming an emergency medical technician. You're about to finish that, right?
Right. I just finished the formal coursework. I have a practical exam in 2 weeks. And then I have to take the written boards, but I'm also already running, call it running with the ambulance crew, going out and calls as a driver and helping with that. I always felt that I wanted to do something as I get closer to retirement. What am I going to do? I can't just stop doing stuff. And I thought, well, this would be a good way to bring my medical stuff back again. I have all this experience in medicine. I taught at Columbia for 20 years and there were a couple accidents right in front of my house. Well, the one time I heard this noise, I didn't see anything, and I walked upstairs and looked out my window, and here's a guy in a motorcycle laying in a ditch, and he'd been laying there for like 5-10 minutes. And so, you know, I called 911 and went out, and then I decided, you know, this would be a good way. There isn't, you know, the closest commercial ambulance is over near Harris Hospital. So it's a long time till a commercial ambulance can get there. And if you need help, you have to rely on the volunteer ambulance crews.
Yeah.
And there are very few EMTs. So I decided that would be a good way to put all of my stuff back together, bring back my medical side and help patients and help the community.
That's fantastic, John. What do you think you're going to be doing in 5 years? What do you envision?
Well, I heard they need to start some EMT schools and training around here. So
okay.
Maybe I can help get some programs started. Yeah. Because I've worked in accreditation in medical and dental and nursing schools and set up programs at the university and know how universities run inside out. So I could help with that and use my newly found EMT training and help build on that. So that might be something. But you never know. I always like tried to keep my options open. And that's how I got into computing. It wasn't like a lifelong plan to get
right.
It wasn't even there. But I saw an opportunity. And what I try to do is pull together all the different parts of my life and glue them together in something new and different to make a new challenge.
Thank you so much for coming up here today. I really enjoy talking to you. And I'll tell you, I feel safe knowing that you're an EMT up here. If I ever have to call. Oh my God, John Zimmerman's out there. Thank God. And thank you. Thank you so much.
Sure. It was enjoyable and glad to talk to you.
Okay. Yeah. I hope you've enjoyed my conversation with John Zimmerman, a Catskill character who truly loves his work and continues to contribute to our community by doing what he loves. I'm Donna Fellenberg. Join me every Saturday morning at 11:30 on WJFF Radio for more conversation on Catskill character.
WJFF Jeffersonville.
Support for Radio Catskill comes from Two Queens, offering coffee, tea, and bees. Located in Pete's Plaza, Narrowsburg, New York. TwoQueensCoffee.com. And from listeners like you. The Radio Catskill Community Awards, September 30th, honoring our healthcare heroes for making a difference, for putting the well-being of others above all else, for staying strong in these unprecedented times, including Sullivan 180. Join us at Calicoon Hills, September 30th. Ticket information at WJFFradio.org. The Radio Catskill Community Awards, honoring our healthcare heroes, September 30th.
On this week's On the Media, how the T-word came to define the right's response to the president's vaccine mandate.
Medical tyranny is still tyranny, and that's exactly what this Biden administration is trying to push on the American people.
Also, the complicated history behind the religious exemption. On this week's On the Media from WNYC.
Support comes from the Catskills Food Hub, connecting the community with local and regionally sourced fresh food. Order online and pick up weekly in Liberty, Livingston Manor, Margaretville, Narrowsburg, and Wurtsboro. Supporting agriculture and contributing to a healthier community. CatskillsFoodHub.org. From the River Reporter newspaper, RiverReporter.com. And from listener donations at WJFFRadio.org.
Support for Radio Catskill comes from the Never Sink General Store, featuring an award-winning chef, smoked barbecue year-round, local products and catering, now offering takeout. NeverSinkGeneralStore.com.